This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. For years, Charlotte has been trying to become more bicycle friendly. Even though we love our cars and we design the city for them, the idea of more bicycles on our streets is appealing to some because they see it as one way to solve the problem of congestion, reduce pollution, and to make us healthier. But, and you know this is true, cars pose a danger to bicyclists, just as bicyclists sharing the road with cars can be frustrating for motorists. I'm just trying to choose the right word there. That's one reason why one group is leading an initiative to bring protected bike lanes to uptown, providing a separate space for two-wheeled vehicles, providing a buffer between them and cars, buses, and trucks. That group is Sustain Charlotte, and they are here this hour to explain the idea. Jordan Moore is Bicycle Program Director at Sustain Charlotte. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. Ken Tippett is Bicycle Program Manager with the Charlotte Department of Transportation. Ken, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mike.
And Al Bangora is Superintendent of Community and Recreation Center Services with Mecklenburg County Parks and Recreation.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
When did the push, and I'm not sure which of you to ask this question, but when did the push to make Charlotte more bicycle-friendly actually begin?
That really goes back to the latter part of the 20th century, which seems so long ago when it really wasn't.
You make it sound long ago. When you say the latter part of the 20th century, it sounds a long time ago.
It certainly does. No, in the 1990s, there was a group of citizens in Charlotte who were concerned how bicycle-unfriendly Charlotte was becoming. They remembered riding their bikes to school, riding their bikes around the city to go places, and it was getting to be much more difficult. So they started working together as a group and raised awareness of the need to be more bicycle friendly, which resulted in the city adopting its first bicycle plan in 2000.
So it's been about 16 years.
That's correct.
Just under two decades. How much has been accomplished?
Actually, right much. In 2003, the city had a grand total of 1 mile of bicycle lane, and that was what we had in bicycle facilities. Now, between bike lanes and signed routes and off-street pathways, we're approaching 200 miles of bikeways. Now, we still have a lot to do. That doesn't even come close to where we need to be, but it certainly is an improvement over a fairly short amount of time. Now, our challenge now is to make sure these things connect, have better connectivity so people can get more use out of them and feel more comfortable on longer rides throughout the city.
Yeah, we've talked about this on this program several times in the past, and every time we've talked about bicycles making the city more bicycle-friendly, we've talked about protecting the bicyclists and protecting the motorists. We've talked about sharing the road. We've talked about how bicycles have the potential, if they're used to enough degree, to reduce congestion, reduce pollution, and make the city healthier as a result of reducing pollution. And if you're a cyclist, it makes you healthier because you're physically fit. If you had to choose one of those things, and I'll talk to the cyclist over here, Jordan Moore. If you had to choose one of those things, which would be the most important, the more important?
Neither. None.
It's all an aggregate?
No. It's the fun.
Really?
Yes, sir. It's the most fun way to get around that I think anybody could ever experience. It's wonderful.
You know, I've done a lot of these shows. No one has ever said that. In my memory, no one has ever said fun.
Well, there it is. There's the answer. I think it's the closest thing that a human could do to flying or swimming that doesn't require some type of external fossil fuel to burn to be able to do it.
You know, it's got to be fun because as a kid, that's all I did.
Right.
I mean, I rode bikes all the time and wanted to ride to school. And my school was uphill both directions in the snow. But I got to do it a couple of times. And it was fun. And I remember as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, some friends of mine and I decided to grow up in Alexandria, Virginia, and some friends and I decided we were going to go to the District of Columbia. We're going to go to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And darned if we didn't. We didn't tell our parents, of course, but we drove across the 14th Street Bridge into Washington, D.C. That's pretty dangerous.
Well,
looking back on it.
Sure. But so is driving a car over there. I mean, there's no guarantee in any mode of transportation when you're in the exterior world that you're somehow insulated from unfortunate danger.
Hmm. There are a lot of people, most of them motorists, who don't understand this. They don't understand why we want to be bicycle friendly or why they have to share the road when they're paying taxes that support them.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I'm glad you brought that point up. Michael, let's go ahead and put one of these misperceptions to rest.
Thank you, KT.
Everybody that drives a car pays a fuel tax. Now, if you take every dollar raised from a fuel tax and add to that every dollar raised through license fees and everything that's auto driving related, that's going to pay today approximately half of what it costs to build, service, and maintain roadways. It doesn't cover the full cost. At its peak, it covered about 70% in the 60s and 70s. But today, with more fuel-efficient motor vehicles, the overall driving trend is that people tend to not drive as much as they used to. That's sort of reflecting the movement back into the inner cities. So really, the balance of that money is coming from, for instance, Charlotte builds most of its roadways through city bonds, which are not based on road taxes. They're backed up by the property tax. Mm-hmm. So everybody pays that, whether they're driving or not. Now, you also mentioned congestion a while ago. I'd like to follow up with congestion. As much as we would like for the bicycle to be the panacea to solve congestion, I really do not know any city, probably on the face of this planet, that has a healthy, vibrant economy, which Charlotte has, that does not have a congestion problem. Even cities that are very bicycle-friendly still have congestion problems. What it does is it gives the person another option. Mm-hmm. That they do not have to be in the congestion. And that's what we do at Charlotte Department of Transportation. We're not a department of motor vehicles. We're not a department of transit. We're a department of transportation. So our role is to try to help people move around more efficiently, whether they're driving or riding bikes or walking or taking transit.
Now, Al Bangora is also with us, and he's with the Mecklenburg Parks and Recreation Department. Yes. And one of the things that you wanted to talk about is safety. Maybe that's safety in the parks, I don't know, but I'm going to ask you a safety question because one of the sure. problems that a lot of motorists have, and their only problem really, is that it's frustrating to share the road with bicyclists. Maybe it's because we don't have enough bike lanes. Or maybe it's because bicyclists don't know or don't follow the rules of the road. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, and you're right. And I think the one of the things that it's been great talking to Jordan and starting this process is how do we get our community to be safe? What does that mean? And one of the things that working with Dick Winters and working with Jordan, Dick Winters from the Health Department and Jordan, is how do we get our kids and our families to ride safely in the city? Part of those initiatives is looking at our parks. We have six parks that we've picked out this year that we're going to do bike safety and education classes taught by a really train the trainer. So we're working with our staff to go and work with the community to learn how to ride safely, how to access the greenways, how to make sure when you're riding that you're safe, that you have the proper equipment on your bikes, whether it's lights or helmets. So those are things that are really essential to sort of break down this myth of this unsafe place to ride. I mean, we have 47 miles of greenways. We're expanding our greenways through Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation, working very hard at building those greenways and connecting people across the city, and that's really critical. And so the safety piece is really it's knowledge. It's really teaching not only parents and kids, but how to ride safely.
Do you see these greenways as kind of a super highway for bicycles?
Oh, absolutely. I'm from Minneapolis, and I lived there for, 36 years. What an incredible city that has, you know, within the park system, 55 miles of ground rounds. You never touch the streets. I used to ride my bike, and my wife and my son would ride along the Mississippi River. You can then access the greenway and literally ride around the entire city for 55 miles.
Wow.
The greenways that exist here have the same potential. They do. People are riding them, but the challenge is sometimes is finding those and understanding how to connect to them. The one thing that I was really great with Jordan coming here and connecting with Jordan and also with Dick Winters, an example, was that there was a place now to connect to understand where to get to those greenways. How do you access them? And someone that can talk about it. I know within Park and Recreation, we have this wonderful map. It's called Go the Greenway, for example, which is a great access. It shows all the greenways and how to get to them and what they are. And it's a great tool. And you can find on the website. But it's really how do you get to them? How do you ride them? It is absolutely the highway that can connect the city in ways that haven't been maybe in the past. But it's connecting neighborhoods, connecting people. So the greenways are absolutely and that's the number one thing that the city talked about in the master plan. Number one thing was greenways. Hmm.
Jordan.
And we have an anomaly here in Charlotte because we have the majority of our greenways and parks closer to underserved neighborhoods. Typically in American cities, parks and greenways are all located near affluent areas. It's the exact opposite here. But the other anomaly is that Charlotte is the 50th out of 50 large American cities for upward economic mobility, meaning that if you're born into poverty here in Charlotte, you're going to stay in poverty more likely than if you were to have been born into poverty in Baltimore or Philadelphia or other areas. And so Charlottians, I think, have a hard time digesting that information because of our growth, because of how nice our city is, because of, you know, the fact you can drive and see all these beautiful neighborhoods and trees. It's sometimes not easy to realize that just behind that, one block over, is a completely underserved neighborhood. But most of those neighborhoods connect to greenways, or at least could connect to greenways. And so we see the bicycle as a form of transportation that would actually create civic engagement, educational opportunities, and opportunities for people in our community of all economic standing to be able to use. The average cost of using a car is $8,000 a year. The average cost of using a bicycle is $300 a year. So,
Mike, let me follow up on something Al was saying about the greenways and the pathways. Charlotte, the city of Charlotte is currently in the process, in a partnership with Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation, to create the Cross Charlotte Trail. Mm. This is a fascinating, this is transformative. It would extend from essentially Pineville all the way to UNCC Charlotte and eventually to the Cabarrus County line, which would be a completely traffic-free facility, totally protected from motor vehicles. It is located, the spine of it is located within a half mile of 80,000 residents and 98,000 jobs. Mm. So this would create a traffic-free facility. Somebody can get on their bike and get into Center City, get into UNC Charlotte, get into Park Road or a number of shopping centers, just get to the Carolinas Healthcare. It could really make a big change.
We've talked about this before in this program, but refresh my memory, and for those people who are new to hearing about this, this would use portions of the greenway that we know of that goes through the Metropolitan downtown.
That is correct.
But that it would be expanded. Where does that stand? How much longer before that really is up and operational?
Well, the portion that heads towards Pineville is probably only 2 or 3 years away from being complete. That's going to give a direct connection all the way into Center City. The other portion has more right-of-way to be gained. So you're probably looking at a number of factors could dictate the pace of when that comes into play. But I use a round figure of around 10 years, but it could go either way.
Do you have any idea how many people might be interested in using it either as obviously a lot of people would use it for recreation, but as a means to get from Pineville to Cabarrus County? Would people really do that?
Well, in Copenhagen, where 600,000 people a day are using their bicycle as transportation,
right.
They had the same question. They thought, you know, human beings probably only want to move about 5 miles at the most for transportation. But they took a chance. They built in essentially a bicycle superhighway that extends something like 20 kilometers. They have 14,000 people a day using it, mm-hmm. and that number is just completely increasing.
We're going to talk more about Copenhagen because I know you have experience there, Jordan, and we're going to talk more about Minneapolis because, Al, you just referenced Minneapolis, and that's an interesting place.
Charlotte as well.
Yeah. Charlotte as well, yes.
Yes. We're going to talk about Charlotte. We're going to talk about protected bike lanes in Charlotte, too. I forgot about that. We're going to go to Copenhagen and forget all this nonsense. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. That is the name of the show, by the way.
Our encore conversation on Charlotte being bicycle-friendly continues in just a moment here on 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting Bob Dylan, performing his over 5 decades of folk and rock music, November 6th at Belk Theater. Tickets available Friday morning at 10 o'clock at 704-372-1000. Support also comes from the Corkscrew Wine Shop and Bar located at Burkdale Village in Lake Norman, offering wines from around the world, live local music, and craft beer on tap. Relax, uncork, unwind. The Corkscrew. Details at thescrewcrew.com. There's been a lot of talk about breaking the glass ceiling, with Hillary Clinton becoming the first woman to be nominated by a major party to be their presidential candidate. And tomorrow morning on Charlotte Talks, we'll look at how this nomination could affect other glass ceilings for women in politics and business and for feminism. That's when Charlotte Talks tomorrow morning at 9 here on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, 20 women have come forward to allege inappropriate behavior by former Fox News chairman Roger Ailes, the latest on the case that led to his abrupt departure and the challenges of confronting harassment and intimidation in the workplace.
Join the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon following Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about making Charlotte a more bicycle-friendly city. And we'll be talking about the idea of introducing protected bike lanes to uptown Charlotte in a moment or two with Jordan Moore, who's the Bicycle Program Director for Sustain Charlotte, Ken Tippett, Bicycle Program Manager for the Charlotte Department of Transportation, and Al Bangora, who is the Superintendent of Community and Recreational Services for Mecklenburg Parks and Recreation. So, Jordan, your position as bicycle program. Before I ask you a question about that, let me bring in an email that we got because we asked a social media question. Do you think Charlotte is a bike-friendly city? And if not, what would you like to see to make it safer or for more cyclists? A question from Ken. Charlotte is supposed to have a bike plan every 5 years. The last plan was in 2008, which means that we are 3 to 4 years behind schedule. Is there a plan for a new plan? And if so, how is the general public supposed to be involved in determining its outcome? And I was going to ask you, Jordan, because your position as Bicycle Program Director for Sustain Charlotte, you're there to help develop this plan.
Yes, sir.
Correct? So where does that plan stand?
The plan stands in a formidable and wonderful fashion. It's actually being updated right now. I would encourage the gentleman who wrote that question to look into an organization called the Bicycle the BAC, the Bicycle Advisory Committee. He can reach out to those guys that are an advisory group at the Department of Transportation that essentially gives their recommendations to council and says what they think needs to be in this plan. It's currently in the process of being updated, which KT is in charge of.
KT is Ken Trippett.
Yes, sir. Ken Tippett over here. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, let me follow up on that. We did adopt the bicycle plan in 2008, and as you know, that is when we had a bit of a economic unfortunate situation. So that put a number of things behind schedule because they were higher priorities and less funding to do them with. So we are now back on schedule. We are working on updating the Charlotte bicycle plan today. We had a public meeting in which we introduced a number of plans that were being done, pedestrian plans, bicycle plans, a series of transportation plans, as well as some efforts from the planning department. We hope to have this plan wrapping up sometime towards the October-November timeframe. But you'll be seeing more public notices for the planned update and public workshops.
And where would people who ride bikes and who are interested in this particularly, where would they find that information?
Well, we normally do a series of things, press releases and broadcasting, email broadcasting. We get people sign up at the CDOT website to be notified of things related to bicycles. So that's probably the best way to get word.
And it may have been a good thing that came out of the 2008 collapse here with that plan, because if it would have gone into place in 2013 when it would have, we wouldn't have known about a lot of stuff that's really come online in the past couple years, like Vision Zero, NACTO ideas, protected bike lanes. We've seen protected bike lanes just have a complete essentially, I mean, it's just a 23 states have adopted them. Asheville's putting one in. Yeah. It's the new normal. It's the new standard. And if that plan would have gone into place in 2013, we might have missed the boat to have this type of stuff actually be in our quiver for what we use when we're designing a more bicycle-friendly city.
Jordan is correct, because the science of bicycle facilities in the United States has advanced pretty rapidly, pretty fast.
What do you mean science?
Well, you know, there's a lot of engineering that goes into bikeways. There's the things you want to put in place to make sure you're not creating a bigger problem, or you want to be sure you're solving problems and making things more efficient for
years
people.
Ago, when we first talked about adding bike lanes on this program, one of the things that people asked was, why can't they just use the sidewalk? And the answer is, sidewalks have dips in them. Sidewalks are for pedestrians. Sidewalks have openings for driveways, and cars aren't expecting people to be on bicyclists to be on the sidewalk. And the other thing we learned was that the grates in the drainage grates in the along the curb had to be changed. The direction had to be changed because bicycle wheels would get caught in there.
That's correct.
So that's the part of the science of all.
That's part of the science of it. Be sure that the facility is something that's functional, efficient, and safe.
Okay.
Well, as well, I want to address those folks that are asking those types of questions, because I know they're motorists, they're daily commuters, they're tuned in and listening right now. And I believe, honestly, you guys should be the ones speaking up the most for protected bike lanes and equal mode share in the road for bicycles, because it's not bicyclists at the end of the day or the beginning of the day that are in your way. It's other single occupancy automobile users. And if people have the choice to get out of their car and safely ride a bicycle, I truly believe that if you learn to ride a bike when you were a kid and you have one now, you're a cyclist. And most people, I think 75 to 90% of people, want to be able to go out there and have this fun. Mm. And they want to be able to get to, you know, somewhere 2 miles away, but won't do it because of the threat.
Let me follow up with that, Mike. You mentioned something earlier about how many people would use these. Well, a survey that was taken in 2004, 12 years ago, indicated just within the city of Charlotte, there are 300,000 bicycles just within the city of Charlotte.
So I was going to ask one of you, do we have a bicycle culture in Charlotte, or are we trying to create one? You're saying we have one.
Well, the bicycle culture is growing. Many of those bicycles sitting there with dry rotted tires, dusty frames, and people call me wanting to and ask me where is a comfortable place they can ride their bike. So we're trying to create those places for them. I can also attest that in 2008, when the gasoline prices were approaching $4 a gallon, mm-hmm. and sometimes passing it, my phone rang a lot for people asking for bike maps. So there is a tipping point where people will start to consider using their bikes more for transportation.
You lived in Minneapolis, Al, for years, as yes. you said, and I understand in that city 6 to 7% of the population uses bikes to commute.
Yes.
And you have 55 miles of connected bike lanes yes. up in Minneapolis. We have 47 already. We're just not too far behind.
Not too far, yeah.
Minneapolis. It's a frozen tundra. So how did that happen there?
I'm not sure.
Mid-June to mid-October, yeah. mid-August.
They ride in the winter. We always laughed in Minnesota. If you actually go there, it could be 10 below, snowing out. And you see these guys, you know, riding their bikes along the greenways. They put those large tires on, you know, and they're fully bundled up, and they got icicles hanging from their face. But they ride.
So when 6 to 7% of the population of a city the size of Minneapolis is riding bicycles and not using their cars, what's the impact of that?
Well, you know, I think, you know, that it changes, the culture of it changes. So it's funny because we always said in Minneapolis that the bikes own the road. You know, you always had this respect for biking. You always understood that.
Do they have protected bike lanes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And actually,
everywhere?
Yeah, actually, even in the downtown area, protected bike lanes in the downtown area, you can pretty much get around the entire city through the Grand Rounds and the bike paths that exist. And they do what they call split lanes. They have where there's a walking pedestrian and then to the right of it, a lane that kind of goes below it would be a biking lane.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this separation times. And so even if you're not riding on the street itself along the greenways, they do have separate pedestrian and biking. And so it really is part of the culture. It's an experience. And I think the thing that we understood there riding is that even the mayor, Mayor Rybeck at the time, was an avid cyclist. And so his passion for riding sort of really, I think, pushed the city even forward more with cycling in the city itself, because he was very avid at cycling around the city. And you'd see him riding his bike, taking the rent bikes that you can rent, and he was riding those around the city. So it was sort of promoting it and talking about it. So let's
talk about it also for a minute. You mentioned how cold it is in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. yet it's one of the more popular places to live today.
Yeah.
And that's partly a result because it has this active lifestyle
right.
mm-hmm. type.
Cultural vibrancy.
And they've built a bicycle culture. Mm-hmm. Charlotte is in competition with Minneapolis. We are in competition with many cities of similar ilk. Denver, some cities on the West Coast. People want to move places that give them a chance to live happy, active, mm-hmm. healthy lifestyles. And for Charlotte to compete with these cities mm-hmm. and compete with them economically, we're going to have to be able to offer something very similar. For instance, people like to move to cities where they want to live and then create a career there. And Charlotte is – we're benefiting. We're getting that to, on average, 44 new residents in Charlotte every day. So in about the next quarter century, Charlotte is going to grow as big as picking up Durham, North Carolina, and putting it right on top of the city mm-hmm. by that many people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to continue to grow, and there's only but so much space where you can put roads and streets and things like that. And these people moving here, they're bringing their cars, they're bringing their bikes, they're bringing everything with them. So we need to have the space and the resources available that they can use these to get around.
So 6 to 7% of the population of Minneapolis rides a bike as a commuting vehicle.
Yes.
How does that compare to Charlotte at the moment?
Oh, we're way behind. We're not even in the same ballpark. Minneapolis was very fortunate in that they got a very large amount of federal money to be a model city of what could be right. done. To
who
be more
who drove
friendly.
That? Was that something that Minneapolis wanted? Did they go after that money? Or did the government just say, well, we'll choose Minneapolis if they'll take this?
It was primarily something that was developed when they were developing the transportation bill back in 2006 mm-hmm. or something. Yes. I can't remember exactly when it was. They selected four locations to be model cities. Minneapolis was one. Minneapolis also benefited in that they have a number of old rail lines that were able to convert over into
exactly.
pathways.
But
we happen to do... We don't have quite as the luxury that they have in Minneapolis, but we do have ways that we can do this also.
But if you're a person here in Charlotte that wants to see this cycling culture develop, you should speak up for getting yourself counted. That's one thing that we don't have going on in Charlotte right now is that we don't have data that shows how many people are going from here to there, how many people are using this thoroughfare. And that's one very important piece because you have to create a baseline in order to understand how much you've grown. I know there's thousands of people listening to this program right now that are their hearts are pumping because they're saying, heck yes, there is a cycling culture here in Charlotte.
Well, Adam on Twitter has just written, we have a great bicycle
that's
culture
right.
in
yes.
Charlotte, many
that's
friendly and committed riders.
But we also have the opportunity to be the cycling culture that the rest of the United States looks at. We could be the Copenhagen of the South.
Talk to me about Copenhagen. I know you spent time in Copenhagen. You spent time in France as well.
Yes, sir.
Working. You've had a very eclectic life.
Thanks.
Because you've worked in vineyards. You've worked in breweries. You were in Copenhagen, and you would like to see this to become the Copenhagen of the South. And
yes.
Copenhagen is a city of bikes. You visited there as part of an 880 city tour last year. Talk to me about how bicycles and bicyclists are integrated into the fabric of that city.
There's just nowhere you would look without seeing one. If you step out any door, you're seeing lines of people on bicycles, and these are...
Was it always that way? Is that a World
no,
War
sir.
II thing, or
no,
is it a new?
No, the Copenhagen was going down the exact model that most American cities have gone down with
all cars all,
with
the,
all,
time.
Cars all the time, carkitecture. And so essentially,
I like that.
Essentially what happened was they proposed ripping out these five beautiful ponds that some crazy king had proposed building in the 1800s and these historic monuments, as well as this gigantic piece of infrastructure, including their central station that the trains go into. And they wanted to replace it with a thoroughfare, an automobile thoroughfare that ran into a big brutalistic kind of government center. And that's when the people in Copenhagen in the late 60s said, absolutely not. So bicycling in and of itself, if you care about cultural preservation, which is a conversation Charlotte needs to have as well, because we do have sustainably built, beautiful roads to ride on. If you ride your bicycle in our neighborhoods, in the first tier neighborhoods, there's nothing like it. This is a great place to be. But we can't allow it to necessarily just be completely revamped in the name of not attempting to design well for those 400,000 people that are coming our way. It's all a design issue. And with the carkitecture, you know, we've got to start looking at what are the answers, what are the options. So we believe that protected bicycle lanes, connectivity in the greenways, protected, connected, clearly marked networks are a way where anybody can go out on their bike and ride.
And you talk, Al, about what being a bicyclist and using your bicycle, both recreationally and for how Jordan uses his to get around, to commute,
yes,
opens up the world,
yes,
to people. They don't see the world in the same way that they do in their cars.
Correct, yeah. And that's something we always talk about, which is really exciting, is that, you know, it's almost as if when you touch something or you feel it, you can see it from a distance. You can drive past it really fast at 50 miles an hour or faster. But when you touch it and you feel it, it changes your perspective of the community that you're in or the place that you live. And I'll give you an example real quickly. We had a program that we had kids that were in a neighborhood that never got out of the neighborhood. And we called it, they were on their block. And the DNR donated, this was in Minneapolis, the DNR donated bikes because their purpose was to get kids out fishing. So simply by donating bikes to the park and recreation, to the community, we got these kids on bikes. We got them on the greenways. We connected them to public art. We connected them to fishing, to the lakes. We connected them to neighborhoods that have rich diversity, ethnic, you know, foods, and meeting new people. These kids that never experienced that before got on their bikes, rode the greenways, and access places in the city they never had before,
mm-hmm,
and experience things they never experienced, from a cultural to nature connection. The one thing that I see very clearly here, working with my partners here, is that there's this whole nature connection too. And the one thing that we're connecting here, the same thing we did in Minneapolis, is connecting to nature. But it was simply the DNR just thought, okay, how do I justify giving bikes? We're the DNR. But by giving bikes, we connected kids to the lakes to go fishing, and to all these other layering opportunities that they had. I see the same thing here within our rec centers. It's the same thing. It's connecting kids to opportunities. If they can't get it at this particular location, they have access to a bike, and then they can ride to another location to access either job opportunities or something that might be offered in the uptown area, for example, or another park, or connecting them to nature and nature experiences that they can have if they go on the along the greenway.
Matthew emails about commuting. He says, I commute to work via bike every day, all four seasons of the year, with some exceptions like heavy thunderstorms. Many do not realize that if you commute 5 miles or less, it's often the same amount of time or less than driving a car.
That's right.
The issue that needs to be raised is, how do we shift our perception of bicycling from recreation and exercise to a functional means of transportation? And Eli Portillo, who's a reporter for the Charlotte Observer, wrote an article recently about riding his bike,
yes,
to work at one day, and it actually saved him time because, mm-hmm, he didn't have to go through the traffic hassles that he deals with in his car.
This is not a theory. It's the absolute facts. One thing that's amazing about this, to piggyback on where Al just was with the placemaking and the public life, the vibrancy of public space, and then to Matthew's point, is that rich people love their time and money, and poor people love their time and money. You know, there's no distinction there. And so if you're somebody who values your time and your money, you get on your bicycle if it's less than 5 miles to, yeah, get to work, and you use it, well, you're saving your money, and I guarantee you it's going to be faster.
Of course, people might be concerned about safety, and that leads us to protected bike lanes. And when we come back, we'll talk about what they are, where you're proposing they would go, and how much it would cost. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
We'll get back to our encore conversation about bicycle friendliness in Charlotte in just a moment here on 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Novant Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, providing comprehensive services and customized treatment plans. More at novanthealth.org/orthopedics. Support also comes from Aldersgate, undergoing a transformative expansion of its 234-acre campus that will include 62 new apartments and villas. Details at AldersgateCCRC.com. More than 20 women have come forward to allege inappropriate behavior by former Fox News chairman Roger Ailes. And coming up in 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, they'll have the latest on this case, which led to AO's abrupt departure from the cable channel and the challenges of confronting harassment and intimidation in the workplace. Again, that's coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
How are Germans reacting to those two attacks?
Well, of course, people are shocked. So, on the one hand, many people...
It's your community. We help you understand it.
If the higher-ups at U.S. Rowing hear a lot of that feedback, the Charlotte product may become the standard Olympic suit going forward.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Jordan Moore, Bicycle Program Director of Sustain Charlotte, and Al Bangora, Superintendent of Community and Recreational Services for Mecklenburg County Parks and Recreation, and Ken Tippett, Bicycle Program Manager for the Charlotte Department of Transportation. Protected bicycle lanes. This is a new concept for a lot of people. I knew a little bit about them, but not very much. And there is a proposal to bring them to at least uptown Charlotte. Who's driving the bus on this project?
Well, I think this is a big community effort. We at Sustain Charlotte have recently launched a campaign called iBikeCLT. That's a hashtag. Mm-hmm. And you can look it up at sustaincharlotte.org/iBikeCLT. And this is a petition or a statement of support that we would like people to sign to get our city council to adopt approving a protected bicycle lane that would connect the Little Sugar Creek Greenway to the Irwin Creek Greenway. So essentially from behind Bank of America Stadium to at 3rd Street or somewhere in that area coming off CPCC, exactly where that greenway goes. So please, if that's something that you believe in, go sign that support. But essentially, it's also a chance for us to go out and build public support, because the Department of Transportation is absolutely on this, and they're beating the drum for that too. There's an urban trails connectivity study that's been requested that they have groups of land designers looking at how this could be done. So right now we feel like we're working in tandem to support what the city is doing and the direction that the city wants to go, and that we're working as an event-making community engagement arm that can actually get people excited about understanding what this is.
Are you a politician? Because I don't think you answered my question.
Did you vote for me?
I will, if you'll answer my question.
Yes, sir.
About protected bike lanes.
Can you ask me the question again?
Sure.
Okay.
Who's promoting this? Is it your group, or is it the city of Charlotte advocating for protected bike lanes uptown?
KT, do you want to take that?
I'll try to address this. It's like Jordan said, it's pretty much a joint effort.
Okay.
It's not. I couldn't pinpoint one particular group and say they're doing it. However, there has been a lot of interest expressed from the public for more protected type facilities. We hear it on a regular basis at CDOT. We've also several members of our city council have mentioned the same thing, because they're hearing it from their constituents.
So let's talk about what these are, because a lot of people, and I was one of them, are not familiar with them. I know they have them in Washington, D.C., right down Pennsylvania Avenue. I think it's Pennsylvania.
Right in the middle, yep.
From the Capitol to the White House. And they have them in other cities. They have them in Minneapolis. What exactly are they? Where do you put them? How do you protect cyclists from cars? How do you protect cars from cyclists? How much real estate does it take? How much is it going to cost?
And that would depend on any given situation.
There's a lot of ifs in there.
Yeah, a lot of ifs. Different streets might need different approaches.
We have a window on 7th Street.
Essentially what you would need.
It's a two-lane road with traffic going in both directions. If you put a protected bike lane on this street, where would you put it?
It would be real difficult on this street because it's a very narrow street.
You could do on this street. You could just wipe the lines off of it and allow traffic to cross it east to west in a few places, and then people could just walk it and bike it. You could take 7th Street off.
You're talking about taking the traffic off of the cars off of it?
If one were to do that. Now, that's just an idea. That's just a complete new way to look at our streetscape.
And that's where the science comes in, Michael. That's where we look at these events and see how's it going to impact traffic. What can be done to make it safe?
You said it would be difficult to do a bike lane on the street because it's a narrow street.
It's a very narrow street with the building setback so close to the street.
a lot. That's a problem throughout a lot of uptown Charlotte.
Yes, it is.
A lot of the streets are very narrow when you compare them to other downtown areas. So are you talking about putting these bike lanes everywhere or just on key arteries?
Oh, it'd primarily be on key arteries. It was not even necessary on every street.
So if you choose Trade and Tryon, let's talk about those two arteries. If you were to do it on either of those, or College Street, or it'd be difficult to do it on Church Street, it seems to me, because it's another small, narrow road. What would it look like?
I can't say it would apply to Church Street or any other specific street in Charlotte, but if you had a cycle track on a roadway, you would essentially have travel lanes for motor vehicles. Then you would have some sort of barrier, whether it's a planter or even on-street parking or something, that would then separate the motor bicycle traffic from the motor vehicle traffic. At intersections, you had to be some sort of control so that cars didn't turn right into a bicyclist as he's passing through the intersection. So any number of approaches can be taken.
So when you do this, I would think a bicycle lane, has just like an automobile lane, has to be a certain width.
Yes.
So how much? You either have to take it from the pedestrian traffic on the sidewalk, or you have to take it from.
Let me say something to that issue, though, Mike, because you're not. We keep using this word "take," and what these bicycle lanes are giving our city space, because it's been proven that when you create the largest paths for the smallest forms of transportation, you create efficiencies in the roadway, especially for large vehicles like buses and delivery vehicles.
Explain that. That's not intuitive.
Like I said before, it's not, but it's conditioning that makes you believe that. Like I said before, it's not the bicyclist that's in your way. It's the other single occupancy vehicle user. And if people in Charlotte had the opportunity to get out of their cars and use their bicycles where they felt safely in 2 and 3 mile instances, then more people are going to choose to do that, be riding their bicycles and walking. Well, you're actually eliminating the number of obstacles that are in your way.
But if you put, and I would imagine in cities, you can tell me what Minneapolis is like, do they have bike lanes going in both directions? Do they have bike lanes on both sides of streets?
Yes.
So has that taken what would have primarily been a four-lane motorist road and turned it into a two-lane? Because you got to narrow something to get sure. those bike lanes in.
I think it goes back to the fact that you're choosing streets that have that can do that. Correct. So there are some streets that are very narrow that are not that right. do not have the bike lanes up. But then the streets that do have the width. And maybe that we even saw construction that was happening where they were constructing. And so they, with the idea and understanding of putting bike lanes in there, they made sure that that particular corridor had that access.
So you're talking about creating a protective barrier, either using planters. I suppose you could use those things that they put up when they're doing highway construction, those cement things that they're ugly, but planters mm-hmm. would be prettier. And you're also talking about using parked cars. So you'd move the cars away from the curb. Of a curb. So how do you prevent some passenger opening the door right into a bicyclist?
But typically, ideally, the design of the cycle track has a buffer area between any door spaces of parked cars and where cyclists will be riding.
So but we already deal with that coming from the left side and traffic coming from behind us anyways.
So it doesn't sound terribly expensive, is it? I mean, if you put a couple of planters down the street, that's not...
Well, as I said, it just depends on the street and the situation. Mm-hmm. It depends on if you have the available space. Of course, if you do, then it's less expensive than if you have to create additional space.
And to be a relativist, if you compare this to the cost of building, let's say, for instance, an exit ramp off of 85 to IKEA or a new highway around the airport... The costs of these things are minuscule as compared to automobile.
Well, let me ask you this. If you were to achieve your dream,
yes, sir.
If you got these protected bike lanes and you connect the greenways, and so people have super highways to get to uptown and they feel safe riding their bicycles in uptown, is Charlotte, our businesses, is the government, are they equipped to handle both bicycle parking, place to put the bike while you're working or while you're shopping or whatever? Are they equipped to provide changing rooms for bicycles? It gets hot here in the summertime.
Yes, it does.
Or showers for people riding their bikes in. Are they ready for that?
Well, we will be, because there's proof that says, for instance, the Danish government has evidence that says every kilometer pedaled leaves 21 cents positively in the economy. Now, in Charlotte, we have 850,000 people. Now, we have 3.7 average trips per day by car per person. So if you removed one trip by car per person times $1.65 at gas, I'll be generous, that's $5.3 million a day that would be left in our local economy. So there's going to be plenty of revenue in the coffers if people use this form of transportation that is of little to no cost to them, of little to no cost to the government, because I guarantee you the return on investment on building automobile infrastructure is nil and is negative. The return on investment on building bicycle infrastructure is positive gains, and we're talking health, we're talking air quality, we're talking...
Right.
In an editorial that you wrote for Charlotte Agenda, you said that for every 10 miles bicycled instead of driven, society saves nearly $10.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it adds up. But when you talk, we were talking about kilometers.
Right. I mean, we've got an the Department of Defense just identified obesity as a national health issue. As a national defense issue, because they've had to add 2 weeks to boot camp. I mean, when you look at our society and when you look at the numbers of people that are in need of exercise, they're in need of – but they don't have the time to do it.
Is it a psychological – are these barriers taking down a psychological barrier to cycling because people are afraid to drive or to bicycle downtown?
Yes.
Do we have instances – how many traffic accidents involving bicyclists are there in Charlotte right now where we don't have these protected lanes?
It's not necessarily about how many people have died or been hit. It's how many people a day tell me
they don't that do they, it
can't,
they're scared.
They can't get their wife to go ride with them anywhere because their wife says, heck no, I'm not going out there with you. Or they don't feel comfortable taking their 8-year-old daughter here because they got to cross this major roadway with no connectivity.
And I think that's kind of part of what we've been talking about. That's where we believe from the park and recreation side, from Mecklenburg County Park and Rec, that we can do that knowledge and that access and that training and that coaching, working with Jordan, working with the health department, working with the community. We can reach out to our community within our centers that are located in the heart of the cities that are connected to the greenways, and we can then do that training in that knowledge base of what does it take to ride. And there's different levels of it. The first can be just simply how to balance, right? Second one could be more about learning how to ride through obstacles. And the third could be simply as learning how to ride on streets and how to be safe and what access points can you get to. One of the things we've even talked about was when we do the training, we put GoPros on these kids' helmets and these parents' helmets, and they would ride around the city and they would take the greenways through our program. And we then can show that as that this is how simple it is mm-hmm. to access these places and how to be safe and to use the greenways and to learn.
A lot of people who don't have bicycles have been given the opportunity to rent them in the last couple of years because mm-hmm. we have these bicycle rental locations scattered around Charlotte near the greenways and also downtown. Have people been doing that? Have people been using these rental bicycles?
Oh, absolutely.
That's how I got here this morning, was on a bicycle mm-hmm. bike.
And we've actually got a piece of legislation in North Carolina that is asking to support the idea that bike share is transportation. We've asked both of our state senators to support that and many, many representatives because we need to start viewing bicycles as transportation, especially at a governmental level. One of the things Copenhagen did is they said, we're going to implement the bicycle in every aspect of our government function that we can. That was one of the biggest ways that they got there.
All right, be honest with me. Two of you ride bicycles. I don't know. I guess you ride bicycles too. I don't know whether you ride a bicycle for commuting purposes, but Ken, you did, and I know Jordan, you do. So are you not intimidated to be mixed in with the flow of automobile traffic in a city where it was designed for cars?
Well, truthfully, me?
Yeah.
No.
You're not intimidated?
No, I'm not. Because I've been cycling for 30, 40 years in all kinds of traffic. I've been all over European cities, cycled around London, cycled around Paris. I'm comfortable working, sharing road with cars because I've developed a certain skill level that I know where to look for potential conflicts.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to train people?
Yes, there is. Mike, it takes a certain amount of time to develop the skills.
Right.
You go out on a ride on Tuesday. You may not feel comfortable Tuesday afternoon, but a year later you'll feel more comfortable.
So where do we stand with these protected bike lanes? At what stage of development? Is this just an idea at the moment, or have you plotted it out on a map where these would go?
No, we haven't gotten as far as exactly where they would all go.
But there are folks studying that.
But that's the point of the Urban Trails Connectivity Study, okay, is to try to identify good candidates.
And what we would like to see is our city council say, when they come back with a good solution, let's get one going.
That's Jordan Moore, Bicycle Program Director with Sustain Charlotte, who joined us in March, along with Ken Tippett, the Bicycle Program Manager with the Charlotte Department of Transportation, and Al Bangora, the Superintendent of Community and Recreation Center Services with Mecklenburg County Parks and Rec. Since that conversation, Jordan Moore has delivered to the City Council a petition with more than 3,000 signatures asking the Council to approve a protected bike lane connecting the Irwin Creek Greenway on the west side of Uptown and the Little Sugar Creek Greenway on the other side of Center City. The petition calls for that bike lane to be approved by the end of this year. Moore presented that petition to City Council last month.
This would launch the process of creating a comprehensive, protected, connected network of bicycle infrastructure that will undoubtedly change the way our citizens move around the city. This would be a recommendation that would allow people to safely travel through Uptown on bicycles from all directions. People would be able to use the Blue Line, the Gold Line, buses, and Cross Charlotte Trail to access our city's economic, civic, and cultural core. Tonight, you have the opportunity to do something much greater than build a bike lane, however. Tonight, you can steer our city in the direction of equality. So many of our residents who live under the weight of being disadvantaged live in neighborhoods that this would benefit. By connecting this lane to our greenways, we'd be connecting our leadership to our leadership's greatest challenge. Safe places for people to use their bicycles will mean a positive turn for social and economic mobility.
The proposal scored a small victory as the council referred the bike lanes issue to its Transportation and Planning Committee, which will take a closer look at the location and cost of protected lanes. Mayor Pro Tem Vi Lyles chairs that committee.
We often talk about what kind of city we want to be, and the city that we talk about mobility choices. So I think we all agree on a vision. We just have to figure out how to get there.
Those talks will likely carry into the city's next budget discussions. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.